This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
According to Professor of Physics Maximilian Abitbol, what happened in Israel last Shabbat, post-Shabbat, was a miracle on the scale of the splitting of the Red Sea. He was, of course, referring to Israel and its allies' ability to protect the country from over 300 missiles fired on it from Iran. According to Professor Abitbol, what happened on a scientific level simply cannot happen statistically. The system had never been tried in real times. Everyone, he says, the pilots, the system operators, and the technology operators acted as one man at one moment in total unity. If this is not an act of God, then I know no longer what a miracle is. I am absolutely delighted to have Dr. David Brock-Katz, military expert, historian, and author, as my guest now to talk about the military campaign Israel has fought since the beginning of the war. Dr. Katz, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to come. Thanks, Cherise.
Dr. Katz, things are happening so fast that, you know, initially I thought we'd talk about Gaza, but Iran seems a lot more pressing. Firstly, let's take us right back to the beginning, that the fear actually at the beginning of the war was Hezbollah and Lebanon.
Hezbollah and Hamas.
So Israel was busy there, but yes, still fighting a little bit of...
And trying to avoid that second front with Hezbollah. I think, yes, taking a lot of care just to be able to, yes, concentrate on Hamas,
yes,
at that moment.
A tit for tat
Understanding that Iran had deployed its proxies and wasn't really going to get, yes, involved at that stage, yeah.
And somebody was actually saying that Israel's fighting the tentacles of the octopus being Iran.
Well, certainly Iran is orchestrating the Houthis and Hamas and Hezbollah. So they're orchestrating it. They are the brains and the intellect behind the octopus. Let's put it that way.
So when Israel attacked Iranians in Syria, is that a declaration of war by Israel?
Well, I just want to backstep on that a little bit, on why they did it. Let's have a look why they did it. And I think it's important, it takes us back now to Gaza. So certainly, and that was the point that I was trying to make in an article that I did recently, is that the Israeli operations in Gaza have been severely curtailed. And a large part of the pressure, there's a lot of pressure coming from the Europeans, etc., and world opinion, we all know about that. But surprisingly to the Israelis, or maybe not so surprisingly, is that the Americans have put pressure on the Israelis to curtail their operations drastically. So they have reduced the forces in Gaza to one battalion from many, many battalions to start off with. When they started off, they deployed 90,000 troops in Gaza. That's a hell of a lot. And now it's way down on that. Numbers are looking like about 3,000. What's happened is now that's given Hamas an opportunity to infiltrate back into the north and that type of thing. And the Americans have said, no more of this conventional type boots on the ground, urban warfare, massive conventional efforts. We're going to allow you to do strikes into Rafah, rather than trying to surround it and obliterating everybody into it. So the Israelis were left with no real option now. Now they were limited to strikes, which is not going to solve the situation, by the way. In my humble opinion, it's not going to get rid of Hamas by any means. Never has in history.
Okay.
This leaves the Israelis with very little option.
Can we just take a pause there?
Yes.
Can Israel get rid of Hamas?
Not under the current operations that it's conducting, where it's been curtailed to do a raiding type of a strategy rather than a persisting strategy. It needs to deploy the majority of its forces back into Gaza and surround and attack Rafah to eliminate Hamas.
So,
if it had a chance. That's, yes, not such an easy ask, by the way, but I'm just saying, that's the only chance it had.
So Israel, I mean, just right after the war, I remember an interview with Naftali Bennett on a mainstream program,
yes,
where he said, it's because of you that this happened, because of you being the Western world. You keep telling Israel to go in and out quickly, do a quick.
Mm.
Had we gone in and done what we needed to do before, maybe this might have been prevented. Are we in the same situation that Israel can never actually finish the job due to world pressure? Or do what it needs to do? I don't know what finish the job means.
Look, the Israelis were doing a hell of a good job. I remember the last interview I had with you, and the last word you said to me, I don't know if it was on or off air, you turned around and said to me, are the Israelis doing well? I think it was on air. And I turned around at you and I said to you, yes, I think they are doing well. So they've come up with amazing tactics. Their casualties are very low, by the way. We're talking 200, 300 casualties over a four-month period. They've taken over a lot of Gaza, and they have, in a very difficult urban environment, they've come up with some unique type of tactics, and they've really done well. So much so is that they've put Hamas back into Rafah and managed to get them to retreat into that. But the operations have been curtailed. If they were given a time limit, the Americans gave them a certain time limit, which I think was by 4 months by December or February. I'm not exactly sure when the time limit was. And before they even reached the time limit, they were curtailed. Mm. They were curtailed. So now they're going to go onto a raiding strategy, which means they are going to try and use precision type raids into Rafah. And this taking out of the Iranian inverted commas embassy, the guys in the annex to the embassy, was one of those strikes, those surgical strikes, to take out the head in this whole operation. Who I think was, by the way, some of them were responsible initially for setting up Hamas for the attack on October the 7th.
Which goes back to my original question. Israel had good reason to do what it did.
It certainly had good reason, but yes. Whether it was legal or not, I don't know.
Does it constitute?
I don't know. I'm not a political scientist. I can't.
I mean, is it taking out somebody in close to an embassy constitute a declaration? Was Iran justified then in saying, well, you took our people, I'm going to fire 300 rockets on your people?
You know, in all this, when last did you ever see a declaration of war? I don't think between Ukraine and Russia, there's never been a declaration of war. I mean, people conduct wars. It's not even a war in the Russian terms. It's a military operation, as they call it. So no war has been declared. Yet they've been fighting for nearly 3 years now. So I don't see any declaration of war coming out. It's not the way things are done, you know, in the modern age. Mm. I mean, they're giving each other hammer blows without a declaration of war. So is it a casus belli for the Israelis to have raided? I mean, it depends where it starts. It's chicken and the egg. I mean, how far are the Iranians behind Hamas attacking on October the 7th? Okay. Is there culpability there or not? You know what I'm saying to you? So, I mean, everybody knows there's culpability.
So, Iran strikes 300 plus missiles.
Yes.
On Israel.
Yes. Okay.
Israel and its partners managed to deflect, whatever the military word is, yes. Neutralize. I don't know what the word is, but... Unfortunately for one Bedouin young girl who was injured, it was a miracle.
Yes.
Or would you put it down to military? I mean, if it's a miracle, does that mean Israel can do it again?
I think it certainly can do it again. I'm not an expert. I'm not a chaplain. I can't tell you whether it was a miracle or not. But let's not take anything away from the Israeli military. By saying that this thing totally was a miracle and about God's intervention, whatever. Intervention or not, they did damn well. They did damn well. And I think the Iranians can, they know it's a failure. It's a failure on the Iranian part. I mean, they certainly wanted the good majority of those missiles to hit wherever they were going to go. You don't shoot off 360 missiles hoping that they're all going to be intercepted and shot down before they do any damage and say, that was my operation, that was my plan. Because that's a miracle. That's a miracle, hoping to shoot off 360 missiles, hoping that does no damage. So certainly they wanted to do damage, and they wanted to teach them a lesson. And the fact that the damage was so minimal was due to, you can't take anything away from the Jordanians and the Saudi Arabians, I think, helped shoot down some of the missiles. The USA and some of the European powers also involved there. But that Iron Dome proved its worth, and other measures that the Israelis must probably took that we don't know about. Yeah, it says a lot about the Israeli defenses and the amount of money that they've spent. I've been a little bit skeptical about the Iron Dome in the past because I think it gives Israel a defensive posture where I don't believe in total defensive postures. You know, you sit behind this Iron Dome and you let it come in and whatever. But in this instance, I think it proved all the technology and what they've put into it has proved very, very worthwhile. Yeah.
Dr. Katz, you said you're not a chaplain. Nobody can play God. I don't think anybody has any idea what is going to happen.
God is on the side of the bigger battalions. On the bigger battalions. God is on the side of those who prepare properly. And Israel certainly did prepare, and they put a lot of effort into this, technologically and psychologically, into the defense, into this Iron Dome defense, etc., etc. And I think that's they must take credit for not sustaining any casualties.
But let's look military options. Nobody knows what's going to happen next. I mean, we don't know moment to moment. Mm. Israel has subsequently struck back.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
assuming Israel had the support of the West,
yes.
Okay, would it be best for there to be a war here and now where Israel can do what it feels it needs to do to secure its citizens? Or is it better to carry on fighting these proxies and not having a war and nobody really... I don't know if anybody really wants a war.
Look, no. I don't think anybody wants an outright war at this stage. What is the best possible outcome here for the Israelis? Let's talk from the Israeli point of view. What is the best possible outcome? Best possible outcome is a regime change in Iran without a war.
Okay. Agreed.
I think the Iranians at this stage...
And not only for Israel, maybe for the Iranian people as well.
Perhaps... Well, yes, for the Iranian people, for the rest of the world. So... I think the Iranians understand the precarious nature of the political situation that they're sitting at the moment on the home front. I think things are not going well on the home front for them at all. And it's looking rather precarious. Is there nothing better than create a little war and a diversion? You know how it works. Mm-hmm. As soon as you've got troubles on the home front, it's great to have a little diversion out there. I mean, we know that. We know how it works here also, politically, about creating diversions.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that would be the ultimate answer, is if we could effect a regime change in Iran without bloodshed or whatever the situation is. The last thing, I mean, it's tempting to turn around to you and say, you know what, this is the time. Let's do it here and now when we're ready and we're prepared. Let's obliterate the nuclear facilities, whatever. I don't know if it's even possible. I'm not 100% sure if it's possible. And there's nothing like it to galvanize the Iranian public behind its government. Now for the Israelis to go and launch a massive retaliation into Iran, it might just have the opposite effect of what they intend. So, difficult answer to tell you. I don't know what the strategy is. I think they sit around the table and they're agonized.
They must agonize.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think this decision to go and attack now, this small attack, let's put it that way.
Let's talk about the small attack.
Just an indication to say, listen, we're here, we can get to your nuclear power station and we're here. And we can send something over that distance without it being shot down. That's what this was all about. Was it done with the American backing? I would say yes. I think the Americans signed off on this. This is where we are now with Israel, which I think is a problem for Israel, actually. That everything has to be signed off by the US at this stage of the game. So I think they went to the US and said, listen, we've got to do something. They all sat down. They had a big argument. They agreed eventually for the Israelis to do this little token gesture. I wouldn't be surprised if the Iranians were in on the deal also to say, listen, this is what we're going to be doing. Take a back seat on this and calm down. I think that might have happened. It may have happened. I don't know. Politics is funny in this region. So, yeah, that's my take on it at the moment.
You kind of said even if Iran was in on it, does that mean there is some kind of behind the scenes communication?
Well, look, certainly the Iranian attack on Israel didn't come as a surprise.
Okay.
It was no surprise. I mean, the Iranians telegraphed this days ahead that this was coming. And American intelligence told the Israelis were coming. The Israelis knew about it, whatever. And I think the Iranians were more concerned about showing their home front that they were going to not stand by and allow their assets overseas to be taken out by the Israelis. So it was more for the home front than for the Israelis. So I think they did signal their intention to do this, and it came as no surprise. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know. I don't have proof. It's just a gut feeling that perhaps this was a little deal struck behind the scenes.
But the indications are that nobody really wants a full-scale war.
I don't believe so.
Certainly America doesn't.
Look, who benefits? Who benefits? I think Iran is on the verge of regime change. I think there's a problem. The Iranians know there's a problem there. So it would be a pity now to go and galvanize the Iranian public behind an unpopular government, because Israel is now the big diversion in the area. So I don't think the Israelis want it. The Iranians certainly don't want to be obliterated. And certainly the Americans don't want this thing to flare up. I see the Russians got involved this morning also to say they're going to back Iran. So this is a tinderbox. It's a tinderbox. Things can go wrong
very quickly.
Very, very quickly. Faster than we even think. So, yeah, everybody's got to take a little bit of a calming measure.
Let's take us now back to Hezbollah.
Yeah.
Where does this leave Hezbollah?
I don't know.
Israel?
Hezbollah has been surprisingly reluctant to give full force to what it has. Apparently it's got hundreds, thousands, in the hundred thousands of missiles that can be launched anywhere in Israel. They are a much more powerful fighting force than Hamas is. They've certainly proved their worth in some of the Israeli incursions into Lebanon, where Hezbollah showed that not only is it an insurgent force, but it's also a conventional force. They took the Israelis on conventionally and did very, very well. So they are a force to be reckoned with. And one would think that if the Iranians wanted to let loose on Hezbollah, and Hezbollah now has found teeth and are able to tell the Iranians they don't want to get involved. I don't believe that. I think the Iranians are pulling the strings. But it's surprising to me that they've been so restrained at this stage. And I would have thought that the retaliation would have come from that side. I would have thought. And it may come now. It may come now. Hezbollah might ramp up what it's doing in the name as a proxy. Right. For the Iranians.
Would Hezbollah, watching what happened on Saturday night, maybe have different thoughts about getting into war with Israel?
I don't know. It's difficult. It's difficult to say, because certainly, let's just say Hezbollah opened up in any... They've been sending missiles over, and there's been a low-intensity war going on there. And both sides are sort of, you know, in a situation, they're sending messages to each other. You know, we're going to send over a couple, and we're going to bomb this. So it hasn't escalated into anything too serious. Although, I mean, all the Israelis have evacuated, hundreds of thousands of Israelis have evacuated the north. That's a problem in itself. But Hezbollah hasn't really set about opening up fully. It hasn't given 100%, anywhere near that. So, what are the reasons for it not doing it? Maybe it wants to preserve itself. It knows what the Israelis are going to retaliate. It knows that the Israelis have pulled out of the Gaza, so they've got men available now to go north. So maybe they're being a little bit cautious. But they take the instructions from Iran, and Iran may turn around now and say, right, ramp it up. Give it another 20-30% of missiles over, you know, and let's see what happens.
And if that happens, Israel's options?
Well, I take comfort in the fact that I think the Israelis have got a great air defense system. I don't know how it's going to fare against thousands and thousands of missiles going over morning, noon, and night. I don't know if it's going to be overwhelmed or not. Also, keep in mind, we've got to look at the cost of these things. I think my last look, and I've just forgive me for the numbers, I'm not 100% sure, but one Israeli Iron Dome missile costs in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and one little missile coming over Hamas is a couple of thousand dollars. So you're not going to win on the economic front over there. So the Iron Dome is an expensive system. You can't put a value on human life, but it's an expensive system to run. It's a huge investment. And if you're going to throw over thousands and thousands of these missiles that they're threatening to from Lebanon, it's a problem. It's a problem.
Dr. Katz, we're going into Pesach knowing that there are still hundreds of Israelis and others who are captured and will not be celebrating any freedom over Pesach. What is Israel's next step with regard to Gaza? What are its options?
Well, at the moment they've been curtailed by the Americans. They can only use a raiding strategy. Hamas is taking this as a win. They're definitely taking this as a win, because now they're ensconced in Rafah. They've survived the worst of the storm. And they are happy to hold on to the hostages. There's no incentive for them at the moment to get the hostages released. Hostages could be anywhere in that tunnel system, whatever the situation is. Not looking good. There's no real reason for Hamas to sit down now at this stage and negotiate with Israelis for the hostage release. So it's not looking fantastic in the short term, that's for sure.
Dr. Katz, it's very hard to say goodbye. I hope you'll come in, because obviously things are changing really, really quickly and all the time.
Be my pleasure.
But thank you very much.
No, thank you so much for having me.
That is military expert, historian and author, Dr. David Brock Katz, talking about the situation. Can't wait to get him back in.